Going on, man. This is Ice Nigma.
Yeah, and this is T Nigma, and this is Enigmas Unchained. On that note, think about Game Pass, right? Game Pass has cost Microsoft hundreds of millions of dollars. And then on top of that, there's a whole nother part of the budget on maintenance and also paying the people out that they actually come into service with. So it was announced today that Game Pass was down to 38% year over year versus last year's at 61%. So that's almost a 20% drop. Okay, almost a 20% drop on profitability for Game Pass. Now next year we get there, and I told Bobby and Matt we'll revisit this after Halo's drop, because I think that some people are probably just holding out for Halo. But even then, did y'all know Lunchables was giving away 3 months to get on Game Pass free?
Yeah. See, God dang it! And I was telling yep. people at work, I was saying, look, y'all may call me whatever you want to call me. But, you know, in terms of this, I'm a prophet. I told them that this thing is unsustainable. It just don't work. And like, oh, you shouldn't worry about Microsoft money, yada, yada, yada. Yeah, I'm worried about Microsoft money. I got 5 shares in that, man. You know how much money that is? That's my money I'm worried about, right? And so the thing about Game Pass is what they're trying to do is they are trying to say, okay, before I kind of get crazy, let me dial it back a little bit. So the... What they're trying to do is they're trying to get you locked into the ecosystem. Yep. They're trying to create a scenario where you can't live without Game Pass. But what Game Pass is literally doing is devaluing games, and it's devaluing Game Pass.
And it's devaluing game consoles too.
It's devaluing consoles. Yep. So if you analyze it like this, right? Okay, I got 2 years of Game Pass for a dollar. I found a way to work my way around the system. I get another 6 months for a dollar.
So
I found
a way to pause for a moment, Matt. This is actually fact, people. Like they were giving away stackable 1 year subscriptions to Game Pass for a dollar. All of that, like I think it was like probably beginning of 2019, beginning of 2020. They were giving them away for a full year. You pay $1. And I know people who paid $5 and got 5 years of Game Pass. It doesn't make sense. Yeah.
And that's it. Cause and then okay, so you devalue Game Pass already by giving away for nothing instead of letting people buying it. I'm not saying you should give people a deal to entice them to come into the ecosystem. Yeah. But the thing about it is you got to do it in a smarter way that breeds value.
Yeah.
So the other issue why Game Pass is devaluing games, Namco Bandai had to come out and say, hey, Tales of Arise will not be a Game Pass day one.
Okay. Absolutely.
And so, and then here's the other mistake, right?
Yeah.
Scarlet Nexus just came out not too long ago. It's now free on Game Pass.
Yeah.
So why in the world would I buy another Namco Bandai game at launch?
Exactly.
When I know if I wait 3 months, you put it on Game Pass.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead, bro. Go ahead, man.
It's no point. And like, okay, so if I look at, and then the other issue too, if I look at Back 4 Blood, if I look at, what was the other game? The Ascent, and it was Hades, right?
Yeah, Hades. Yeah.
I have no reason whatsoever to buy your game on PlayStation, right?
Yeah.
And I also have no desire to buy your game or even download it on Game Pass because it's devalued. Well, I can wait 100 years to play it. It's not rushing me to play the game. Why would I be? So I'll just wait till later. And you know, it's a damn sad state of affairs when one copy or as far as sales are going, digitally and physically, that 90-something% of the sales of one game is going to one console.
Yeah.
It's a damn shame. And there's no parity.
Yeah.
Microsoft or Phil Spencer, they can't think of a way to fix this thing without throwing money at it. And so in their opinion, the strategy is working. I'm throwing tons of money at it. We are getting new people. Maybe not the rate we want, but we still get new people.
Yeah.
Well, I got a big pop when I bought Bethesda. Let me spend another $1 billion to buy somebody.
Yeah. Well, you got to ask yourself the question, like, I don't think people are thinking about when you look at Game Pass. I ask the question, like, well, who's this for? Like, you know, like who is really Game Pass in subscription and gaming? Who's it really for? Because, you know, people always make the, you know, they always make the comparison. They'll say, well, you know, Netflix, Hulu, everything's going into a service.
That story don't make no sense at all to me. Like,
how we consume games is different, though.
It's completely different.
You're right. So if you look at the average gamer, right, like the average gamer, you got different. I'm not going to sit here and label. I'm not going to categorize all the different gamers, but you got a gamer that looks at stuff and they get excited. Yep. And they say, like, Elden Ring comes out in February.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And the new Destiny DLC and I'm trying to think. Dying Light comes out. Saints Row. Mm-hmm. So you got that type of gamer. You know, Call of Duty's coming out November 5th. Battlefield 2 weeks later. Pokemon's coming out.
Yeah.
So it's the new thing.
Yeah.
So you got that gamer. And then you have a gamer that's more like a could be the same gamer, but like a hobby gamer. Because now when you play games like COD, Warzone, Apex Legends, Destiny, Final Fantasy 14, like those games take, basically that's a commitment.
Yeah.
Those are committed gamers. Like you literally can sit here and play those MMO type grind games for like 8 hours a day.
Mm.
And if you jump the battle royale and multiplayer games, it takes a lot of practice when everybody's practicing 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
So then I heard a lot of people say with Game Pass, you know, the kids, but the kids don't play. They don't play abroad. Like, so the kids, like, why would you, like, think about it like this? So Phil Spencer would say Game Pass is $10-$15 a month. Now, little Billy would say, well, all my games are free to play anyway. So why would I give you $15?
Exactly.
Roblox is free. Fortnite is already free. Apex Legends is already free. Like, I already have the ultimate gaming experience because all my games are free to play.
And you know what makes it worse? They have the ultimate game experience for them for $10 a month, because if Fortnite does a season, it's just $10 a month.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
So, they don't need you. Right. You know, so since you asked that question, you know, Steals, who is Game Pass for? And Matt, you jump in because I'm stumped. Who is it for?
Go ahead.
So the thing with Game Pass, even though if you want to ask her who is it for, they may not say it on paperwork, but their target demographic has got to be for the people from 25 to 40, right? The thing about the 25 to 40 demographic is split. Because if you're 25 to about 30, you're still playing a lot of free-to-play games, right? You're still playing Apex Legends. You're still playing COD, Warzone. Mm-hmm. And then you may buy one or two blockbusters a year, right? And so Microsoft is thinking, okay, I get you in here, right? I know you're playing Apex. I know you're playing COD. But instead of you having to spend money on these blockbusters, right, I'm just going to sell you Game Pass for X amount of dollars a month. And then if you look at like something like the older crowd, right, they only buy a couple games a year. And so they think, all right, so I got you. You give me $60 or $120 for Game Pass. Instead of you buying four games, you'd be able to play hundreds of games. Mm-hmm. But the core issue is that people don't play as many games as they think people play.
Exactly.
They don't play 100 games, right? Because it's not what it used to be. Everybody used to rag on, oh man, this game's only 8-10 hours. But you can beat a bunch of 8-10 hour games.
Yep.
Now every game requiring 50-60 hours to beat, you're not plowing through that many. Now if you're 25 to 40, you're working 40 hours a week, you probably got a wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, or something like that, probably got a dog, probably got a kid. You know, you got something that you're doing. You know, and a lot of people that's 25 to 40 sitting on their ass playing every day, right?
Yeah.
Or if they're doing, they don't have money like that. They being funded by somebody else. So that
it's few and far between. Like, there's not many folk that's built like that. Yeah.
Trust me when I tell you, because we all been in relationships. Ain't no way, or in one right now. Ain't no way in hell you go play 8 hours a day, go to work, and spend time with your lady, it ain't no way, bro. She'll kill you.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like,
I can't even watch football sometimes.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you watch it and look at it, they'll tell you, you know, subscribe to Game Pass or subscribe to PlayStation Now. Let's just be fair, you know.
Yep.
And they say, you know, over 500 games.
Yeah.
Over 1,000 games.
That's not attractive to me, man.
But you gotta think about it. If you look at me, right, and I'm trying to look at my catalog. You know, I bought Metroid, Tales of Arise. It was something else that came out. Lost Judgment. And I was just finishing up Ghost.
Yeah.
So this is where a lot of times I think a lot of the Xbox guys get confused when the PlayStation guys say we don't really need a service like that. Because I'm already playing my maxed out amount of games. So it sounds nice that you know, somebody comes in and says, well, Back for Blood is free. You know what I'm saying? But can you really play the game?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? It's like Steam. Yeah, the games are $2 and they sound cheap, but are you going to play it?
Are you like, yeah, are you buying it because of pride?
Like, right.
You buying it because you want to say that you got it because you want to fit in the in crowd. But are you actually sitting down to play these games?
Right. And the answer really is no. And so most guys already know that. Like, I like coming in, like even in February where there's a ton of games, like I can't play them all.
Yeah.
So I already know exactly what I'm going to buy and what I'm going to play.
Yeah.
So that kind of like puts that pushes the need of Game Pass out the way, because it's like if those the only way it would work or subscription based service across any board, all the games have to be on it. You know what I'm saying? It can't be just the exclusives, everything.
Yeah.
Like the whole entire COD needs to be, everything that you buy would have to be on that service. And they would say, hey, you give us $40 a month and you don't even buy games anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and as crazy as this might sound, I think that model is a better model, because then at least, especially for a person that knows they're going to be getting those joints every single month, for like $60 to $180 to $300 a month, they're already going to be paying to get the brand new games. If I'm saying all of them are there, you know, so like every single doggone game is there, you save lots of dough if you do it that route. Now, but then you go to like us, you know, so I'm not buying, you know, probably not, especially now, because I'm so disinterested in a lot of the games now because they all look the same, you know, so I'm looking for like something that looks interesting, different. So that puts me down to now probably like 3 to 5 a year that really do catch my interest. And that's pretty much it. I'm not buying anything else. I don't want anything else because no offense. I don't want my backlog. I don't want to brag about me having a backlog. I just think that's stupid. That's one of the stupidest trends in gaming right now. Or, you know, I got this backlog, man. I got this long backlog. I'm like, that's stupid. That means you wasted money. You didn't even that's like you buying a movie ticket and not going to the theater. I got all these movie tickets, but I ain't got a chance to go to the theater.
Well, I mean, because human nature is that you want to go to it's like human nature dictates when you go to the theater, you go to watch what you want to watch. So that's why you pay. It's like you go to like Swamp Foss. They got about 10, 15 movies playing at one time. Right.
Yeah.
So like in a normal gamer mind, like, you know, me and Toya, we're going to go see, let's say, the new Matrix movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're going to go watch. The Game Pass mindset is you watch what we give you. You see what I'm saying? So, So it's like, so that's where it fails, because that's why I keep saying, like, for me, it's not about it being worth it or not. It's about the fact that if you're not putting the games I choose in it at the time I want to play it, then it's irrelevant for me as a consumer.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, that's a fair point you just made there, because I didn't even think about that. Like, that they don't even just put everything up. They put stuff that they feel like you want in it and tell you that you want it. You know, so that is like PlayStation Now is literally a unknown. Like they don't, when we were in meetings with them talking about PlayStation Now, it was one of the last things to talk about. Okay. It was one of the last things to even get on a docket. They were like, look, man, this is here. It's a service. Let's move on to the games. Right. Like that it wasn't the main course. It was like, this is an additional stream of income that if it fails, it is what it is. You know what I'm saying? But if we do well, then that's cool too. But they didn't make it the focal point of the actual gaming network, because we understand, like they do, which Microsoft for some reason does not, is that gaming has to be something that you feel. If you don't feel it, you will stop buying. That is how, that's how console, that's how the consoles ebb and flow, is that you make a console that people can feel. I feel like this console pretty much becomes a character of its own in gaming. So as you see, like how people are like, will take the PlayStation 5 and change it into different personalities, same thing with Xbox, turn into a refrigerator, literally. But you know what I'm saying? But you know, like you, yeah, Transformer, man. You know what I'm saying? And apparently all the scalpers bought the refrigerators too. That was funny. But you look at the situation around, you know, like how you even present the system. The system itself is a character that you're selling to people, and they have to feel it. They have to feel like they made the right purchase. They have to feel like this is the right place to go. And if you're telling me when I purchase your system, the most powerful, most powerfulest, most consolist console to ever console, and then immediately after, oh yeah, you don't even need that thing though, because we got Game Pass. You can get the S instead. You know, it's cheaper and it's less powerful, but hey, you'll run Game Pass. You know what I'm saying? So it'll work, because of course they sold like 3-to-1 S's versus the X, Series X.
Nah, well, see, you know, jumping into that. So like, I don't think people understand how bad off Microsoft is. Like, if you come and look, like he said, 3-to-1, they sold 8 million. So that means only at max, what, 3 million X's have sold?
Yeah.
So I always made the argument that the S is not even next gen.
It's not,
because Sony couldn't get away with just putting a faster hard drive in it in the PlayStation 4 Pro.
Yep.
No.
And call it a PS5. Like, it's next gen because, right.
Yep.
You know, so.
Oh, they got dragged for that, Bo. Oh, my goodness. They got dragged for it.
Now, here's my thing. I want to say this. I want to say this, too, about Game Pass. I'm going to spin it another different direction. Now, I think Microsoft knew that it was going to fail. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, okay, hear me out now, because I'm a business guy, right? And Microsoft told me, if I'm sitting in the boardroom and the guy comes in and showed me the statistics and he said, well, the most we haven't made any money off systems ever. We make our licensing fee off the games. The only thing we make money off of is Xbox Live, right? So that means there's a budget for Xbox Live that's outside of, well, there's a budget for the console, there's a budget for Live, and there's a budget for games, right? And so, you know, that Microsoft as a company cuts a big check, and then the check is split to handle, you know, those different fractions. So if I'm a guy and I'm saying, well, we make all our profit for the majority part is Xbox Live,
yeah,
then I want to double the price. But I can't double the price, not on paper.
Yeah.
You see, I can't just come out and tell Matt that you're going to pay $120 for, you know, a year for Xbox Live.
Yeah.
But I can create a scarecrow service.
Yeah.
And call it Game Pass. Cut a budget for it and double the price.
Yeah.
You see, because ultimately it's all about profit margins.
Yeah.
If you're dealing with the boardroom, you see what I'm saying? So,
here's the thing too. And I hate to jump in. You know, if you look at what they did with the games for gold, you know, the games they added, man, that's already factored into like the profit and budget, because it's probably about the same amount of money they was going to spend with just when they were still doing good games with gold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you can go around and, you know, you can, like, if we was Microsoft, you know, what's coming out next?
Halo.
You know, Halo, I'm not going to count those. Like, because that's Microsoft, you know what I'm saying? So you know, so if you look at, like, I'm trying to think, like, Saints Row, you know what I'm saying? So Microsoft will wait a little bit longer to kind of see what the numbers look like on their own system. So they can, it's easy then to go to THQ.
THQ. Yeah.
So you go to them and say, hey, man, look, you don't have any traction on our system. You know what I'm saying? So basically you ain't gonna sell nothing. You know, that's just basically what it is, because that's the whole point of taking pre-orders. The whole point of pre-orders is to gauge what the sales may be, and what, you know, so if you're not that good, you can delay the game.
Yep.
You know, you can spend more money in marketing.
Yep.
Maybe cut a demo, you know what I'm saying, to get the numbers where they try to get the numbers up to where they need to be.
Yep.
And so You know, so it's like, well, hey, you man, you ain't gonna sell nothing. So how about if we cut you a check for $10 million?
Yeah.
You see, 10, 15, whatever Microsoft deems worthy. And, you know, and they go back and forth and they say, well, hey, you know, we wouldn't go make nothing but $10 million.
Yeah.
Microsoft said, we'll give you $20 million.
Yeah.
So, I mean, why not?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? And all that budget does is come out of whatever the budget Microsoft gave them as a collective for that thing. So they may have, let's say, $200 million to spend.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So that's how they entice you. Because Phil Spencer already said you get one game per quarter.
Yep.
You see what I'm saying? You get one major lease per quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else will be indie. And I'm pretty sure the indies don't cost much money.
No, they don't. I mean, a basic indie production buy-in is $10,000, like from the developer, because they have to kind of pay them to do the work. After that, you know, like most of the stuff is dividends. You know, it's like most of the time the indie developers are coming with their own gear. They just need the kits from the developer. So if they come to PlayStation and they do their iHeart Indie program initiative, they have to go through that program. Once they get qualified, they get $10,000, they get a kit. And once they get the kit, they get to work. But they pretty much like eat most of the cost because it's still their game. And maintenance and stuff like that is still on them. But PlayStation is pretty much like throwing away the cost to actually platform on their system for profit. When it comes to stuff like that. So because it's so cheap to make an indie game. So, yeah, I mean, and that's what I said. That's one of the reasons why, like, people like Sean Layton and a couple of the guys are speaking out against AAA games is because the creativity on Bubble has closed on AAA games. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're only going to keep getting spins of what we've already gotten so far. While indies is like, let's talk about Kena for a quick second. I'm saying like Kena is an indie pretty much inspired game, and it is freaking great. Mm-hmm. And it's different. You know what I'm saying? Like and that's what I said, I just want to play something that's different, but it's fun, has a good story. Don't have to go too deep, but the story goes just enough like Metroid Dread does in the same sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, it's good enough for you to catch it and you're like, all right, cool. I get what's going on. Give me these powers. Let's go ahead and figure this out. $40 game. And it did pretty well. You know what I'm saying? Like, you match that up against like another blockbuster game that's going to be like $70. You know what I'm saying? To buy. And even if I go to Halo Infinite, you know what I'm saying? Like that game is going to be $60 or you buy it on Game Pass, right? You're just buying manufactured cheese. It's the same thing. There's no variance. There's no innovation. There's none of that. So when you stop innovating, honestly, to me, the point that you stop innovating is the point that you die. And that's the reason why, like I was like just processing like what the world of future gaming is going to look like, because we're starting to see innovation in gaming coming to a screeching halt where it's just going to become graphics and an empty shell, you know. So that's at least what I'm feeling right now. Like, it feels like we're going to get like I've been telling people this entire time. I said, look, graphics now is standard issue. OK, that's not the objective aim for a game or quality. You should already have that figured out. Now, what you need to do is figure out how we play this game differently. That should be something that you focus on. How in the world can I play this game differently from what people have already played? Kena gave you a staff that turns into a bow and arrow. That's, I ain't going to spoil beyond that. But there's so many different applications to this thing that she's been given that you like, yo, I didn't think I could do this. So when you're playing a game, it plays so different, because then you got a whole nother dynamic with the rot that you can control, and you do all these, like, it's so dynamically different. So you want to play it again, even after you beat, because there's so many parts of the world too. Well, you give me Last of Us 2. Graphically beautiful, but it's empty. You know, you play it once and it's like, okay, all right. Thank you.
Well, see, that's it. Like you said, what's the problem going forward? And the real problem is, you know, this fear. I hate to bring up another Doom reference. God damn, but I feel like I've been. I done read 4 to 6 books. I done watched the movie, the old movie. And this has been my whole 2 months. But, you know, Paul Atreides said, look, stagnation, you know, there was a point where he was saying, why can't the members of the Spacing Guild stop me? Because to go where I go or to stop me, you have to go in a place where there's a chance of failure, that you could lose everything. Yeah. But you're too afraid to go to that point. And what's happening now is there is, outside of maybe Capcom and a few other studios, there is just fear because there is a fear of failure because, you know,
it's reeks of fear, bro.
Yeah. They just, they playing with too much money. And I kind of get it a little bit too. But until they start taking risks, until they start putting out games that people that may push something forward or change something or just would be one super big risk, you know, it's going to be in a state of stagnation. And we're going to be like this for a while until somebody with a, you know, with some brass balls on them says, all right, hey, we're going to make a new game. We're going to do something that's not focused on multiplayer. We're going to do something that's not focused on microtransactions. We're going to do something that doesn't have a open, that's not open world, but pointless things to do. We're going to do something different. And until that happens, we're going to get a, we will get a lot of the same games, man. You know, but the PS2 era where you had something different to play every couple of weeks, that's
every couple of weeks, bro.
That's oh my dead, goodness. Man.
Like literally the goal of gaming is PS2.
Yeah, that's
you know, like that. That was to me the golden era of gaming. There was so much different to play when you picked up a PS2. Like you, if you picked it up the day you want to play a fighter, there's plenty of fighters. You want to pick and play RPG, plenty of RPGs. You want to get an action adventure in, go ahead and figure that out. And then on top of that, they made characters that still stick today.
Like they made people that you like.
As an avid example, Sora. You know, with Kingdom Hearts. That's PS2. You know what I'm saying? So look at what Sora has accomplished in 20 years. It has grown men crying because he's on Smash Bros. Man. People are literally, I watch reaction videos where grown men are crying into their own lap. That's a timeless character. I mean, I'm not a fan of Kingdom Hearts. Please don't hate me. I really don't like Kingdom Hearts. You know, but I understand why people love the game, and I'm not going to come against that. But that character is timeless.
Yeah. I think honestly, you know, I think this is going to sound bad, but, you know, the American was kind of out of gaming after Atari for a while. Like, you know, if you go into history and look at it, like, okay, Americans have a big presence in gaming. They come in with Atari and stuff, and then they have their crash, and then they kind of exit. And then you kind of, you know, you get Nintendo and you get Sega, and then you kind of have this situation where it's real Asian influenced.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you go for years. We're talking about all the way up to the Dreamcast. You know what I'm saying? Until we got something where America steps back in a very influential way, you know, with the Xbox. Mm-hmm. And then you get, you know, Halo, Fable, and some games like that.
Elder Scrolls.
You know, the Elder Scrolls, right. There's Morrowind, right. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. And they're kind of like, hey, we're back. We're trying to be back. And then the 360 kind of put them back on the map. And they did, and I'm not lying, they did pretty good for about 3 or 4 years. But then money sabotaged American gaming, you know, when they saw how much money you can make off COD.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once they saw how much money they could make, just off multiplayer and stuff, then they kind of like, that's when you started. Cause you think a lot of people don't realize, like, you know, you had like Last Remnant, mm-hmm. Infinite Discovery, Tales of Vesteria, Star Ocean was exclusive, Blue Dragon. Lost Odyssey, like them all JRPGs,
and all them drawings for fire,
right?
All of them, like all of them, you know what I'm saying, man.
Right? And you know, then you put in Alan Wake, Fable. So you like, Darren, that's a whole different type of Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and you fast forward, you know, and it's not like that anymore. So when you look at an Xbox and not just the system, when you look at the system and you kind of look at what's being played on it, you know, there's really no room for anything in the story.
Yeah.
Now, there's a reason why Scarlet Nexus went free, because I mean, Bandai just knew that what I'm saying, like, it makes
sense.
We're not just gonna sell anything there.
Yeah, facts.
You know what I'm saying? So if Microsoft wants to come cut a check for 10, 20 million, I mean, why not just take the money?
Yeah.
Because I mean, at least it covers.
It gives them something.
Right.
It gives them something. You know, like so on that same point, thinking about how Microsoft and even PlayStation in this particular regard have programmed their gamers to think a particular way. So yeah. Like with Xbox, they program their gamers to only consider like mostly multiplayer games as the viable option, as the only place to actually find like a form of satisfaction, because your homies and them can all jump in. While on PlayStation side, they're like, look, we're gonna give you a cinematic experience, and then you can wait on those for like 3 to 4 years, like literally. If you really look at like the head count for most of the AAA games, it's usually a 3 to 4 year head count. Like before you get a new one of that same franchise. So like Horizon Zero Dawn 2017, it'll be 2022. When that's 5 years. God of War came out in 2018. It'll be 2022 by the time we get this new. That's 4 years. You know, so I'm not making this up. Like for folk that's like, you know, no, he coming to his PlayStation. I'm just telling you the truth. They program you to be patient. Microsoft programmed their people to want to only game online. Like online gaming is the lifeblood of Microsoft for that reason. Nintendo has done this very interesting dynamic where they program their gamers to be open. I still don't understand it, bro. I've been trying to figure it out. I'm like, what is y'all sales strategy? You know,
it's very Asian. It's like I always use Final Fantasy 14, for example. Like if you ever play that game, you ever notice how it's like they don't care about you in a way?
Yeah, for real.
Like the game came out on the PS3, right?
Yep.
And so it's been through the PS3, PS4, PS5. Yeah. So we're talking about 2 years between each DLC. So we're talking about Realm Reborn. That's 2 years. What's the thing called? Heavenly Sword. That's 4 years. Stormblood is 6. Shadowbringers is 8. So Endwalker's 10. 10
goodness,
years.
Goodness.
So you got crazy. 8 years. You got 8 years of content right now. And you're gonna go through all of it. You're not, there's no, you see what I'm saying? Like yes, there's no true. You're yeah, gonna buy the true. Game, you're gonna pay the money for the game.
You got to pay for all these
suckers. And the subscription.
No skipping.
Right. And you're gonna play through the whole game.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what if you can endure it. Yep. Like, if you can't endure it, then hey, maybe 14 ain't for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, that's Nintendo. Like, you know, you don't like Xenoblade Chronicles? Hey, fine. Like Astro Train? Nah. Mm-hmm. Like Metroid? No. Mario? Like, if you don't, then hey, maybe the Switch ain't for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we didn't get a Switch Pro. Like, everybody keeps saying, like, oh, well, you know, Nintendo needs a more powerful Switch. And when you really think about it, like, for what? Like, cause they're not selling it. You know, they're not selling it.
Thank you.
They're not selling the games. Another handheld.
No, nope.
You can play GTA 5 some more or a COD. They're selling you like, hey, you play Metroid on the Switch.
Here's some games.
You play Xenoblade Chronicles on the Switch. Mm-hmm. You play, you know, Mario and Yoshi and, you know, Kirby on the Switch. You play Animal Crossing on the Switch. And that's why you play the Switch.
Yo, get this right here. I'm just going to read. I just had to look up the Final Fantasy 14 DLCs. I just got to read them out because it's crazy. 2013, Realm Reborn. 2013, End of Year, A Realm Awoken. 2014, early 2014 is March, Through the Maelstrom. July 2014, Defenders of Erezia. I think I stopped at Dreams of Ice, which was October of 2014. Before the Fall was 2015. Heavensward was 2015. Stormblood was 2017. Shadowbringers was June the 2nd of 2019. And then Endwalker is coming out in November. Mm-hmm. So you have, and what's crazy is that they grew every single time. As a matter of fact, people made documentaries on the impact of Final Fantasy 14 on families. You seen that, Joy?
Yeah.
But see, that's it, you know, and that goes back to what I was saying earlier, man, you know, about Nintendo, Toriyama, whatever like that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can't let, you know, and it's good to listen to feedback from the fans. But if you are an artist, if you're creating something, sometimes you got to shut out everything else
and just
put your head and just do what you do.
Just
because if you go with paint with red and somebody says you should paint with blue, and you mess up your whole formula. Okay, well, I'm not good with blue, so I'm not going to do it. But, you know, there's some other people that can do blue. You might want to holler at them.
Yeah.
You got to stay in your lane, you know, and like going back to what Bobby said about the American companies, man, it's the same problem. And it's really why And it's why something like Squid Game is so popular right now.
Yeah.
American media is consumed with earning money. And I get it that, you know, that's the whole point of doing business is to get paid. But there is just a void of any substance. There's just a void there. And like something like Squid Game comes through and it just, all right, I'm going to take over. Like something like Tales of Arise came through, like, all right, I'm going to take over.
Yep.
Because, you know, we just make it what we make and we hope you like it. You know, if you do like it, you go throw some money at us.
That's it. Yeah, that's it.
I mean, like, it was funny because like a couple months ago, about 6 months ago, I'm trying to think, somebody told me I should watch Sweet Home.
Right? Okay.
And so it's Korean too.
Yeah.
So it was on Netflix. So I watched it and I said, that's pretty good right there. So that's like Resident Evil, a biohazard mixed with
pretty much
Tokyo Ghoul.
Yeah. A manga too. A manga. Yeah. Excuse me.
Yep.
And, you know, once you watch that, you know, he'll say, well, if you like that, then hey, check this out.
Yep.
And then I saw the Yin Yang Master.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then good I stuff. Told her, I said, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I say, if this right here gets, if people find out about this section down here, I said, it's going to be a wrap. For American, the American part. I said, because I said, it's only going to take, that is crazy. Cause I told her that. I said, it's only going to take one of these to catch on.
Yep.
I said, cause these are very well written.
Yep.
And I like, they're very anime-ish.
Yep.
But I said, but you know, more live action.
Yep.
Real people.
Yep.
And then Squid Game comes and it's gone. Like number one show ever
on Netflix. It beat Bridgerton. I didn't even think that was possible. You know, so it beat Bridgerton in like a week.
Well, see, the thing about Bridgerton is that's one demographic. That's okay. Yep. That's women.
Just
right?
One.
Yep. Yeah. It's just one demographic.
Yeah.
Squid Game touched damn near everybody in some type of way.
So on that right there though, my theory was, and I told my wife this because we're watching a show right now. We do Viki. I don't do Netflix. I haven't given Netflix any money since 2017. but we watch Viki, and Viki does they have Chinese, mainland China, Korean, Japanese, Taiwanese. They do all their like dramas and stuff like that. And they got special deals with like Kokowa and SBS and a couple of people to actually get their shows drop on there. And I told her, I said, once America gets over the subtitle situation, that's it. And what I found as far as me, one of the most interesting commentaries that come out of Squid Game is that people hate the dub, so they switch the sub. And I said, oh well, look at that. I said, so now the sub situation is about to die in America. Where like most of the people that you talk to, even with anime, they're like, I don't like watching no stuff with anime subtitles. And we've been telling people for years that it is the best way to watch it. It's either you understand Japanese and don't need subtitles, or you got Japanese and you need subtitles. The dub to me is like literally you only find a few of them that are like the absolute best version, but it's the body, like it's like 1 out of 100. Usually it's very good when it's dubbed. So like I was like, once they get over the dub sub situation, Korea's gonna blow up. And lo and behold, like you said earlier, Squid Games drop. They have compelling characters. Mm-hmm. The story's pretty simple, but they have compelling characters.
And it's a damn shame. It's a damn shame that these American studios or whatever can't get out of their own way.
You know,
and
you
tell
know,
something great.
You know what's crazy? Damn shame. You know, I'm gonna tell you what was real crazy, and this is real messed up because Homeboy wrote this in 2009. That was before Hunger Games got into theaters, right? He wrote this way back then. And they still wouldn't let him in, right? Now I'm processing this on my side. Now before that, there was another before him. It was Battle Royale. I think that's probably the reason why, because they got a very bad perception in the West. I love that movie. But Battle Royale, Battle Royale was raw. It's still raw. I mean, it's still raw than Squid Game. So if you watch Squid Games, you want to watch something else like that, look up Battle Royale from 2000. It's a 2-hour, 30-minute movie, and it will rock your world. Like it is like the grandfather of this particular type of genre when it comes to like at least for me, when it deals with like that genre, like putting people in a situation of survival and pitting them against each other for a few days. But Battle Royale, man, put that thing down on your list to just go ahead and put that up. But what Squid Games ended up doing is proving the point that we're talking about. The issue that we're seeing in gaming and geek media
is that there is a popularized agenda propagandist thing that they got going on over here that foregoes making great characters and good stories. So what they end up doing, instead of making a great character, they'll take a character and they'll recycle it and they'll clean it into something and try and change it into something that it can't be. You know what I'm saying? Like so you took, like I said, you look at, you take Superman, who can literally blow out ice breath, and you give him a sign saying climate control and there ain't no plan B. When this dude literally is the solution to that, if you just flies to Antarctica and literally freezes the freaking up. And he can like literally make glaciers. He can make glaciers with his breath. Let's not get it twisted. He can make glaciers with his breath to restabilize the Earth's atmosphere and climate control. If you saying that there ain't no plan, there's no planet B. He has a solution. So you got this dude standing outside with a sign up. That's what's wrong with American media. And gaming media now is on the same path. If folk do not find a way to tone down the cost for making these video games, one, two, and they do not get themselves into making mitigated risk for when they're dealing with video games. There's a way they can mitigate these risks by doing something very interesting and actually marketing it in a way that makes sense versus it just being blasted out the NBA. Because most people don't, NBA ain't going, they don't care. They don't care about that. Football folk don't care about that. Like that's the majority of folk. They're like, it ain't sports. You know, so what do they care for? Most of them cats don't really care. So stop advertising to them. Advertise to people you know that want to buy stuff. Put it in front of people that you know want to actually buy. Don't put it on IGN anymore. No offense. IGN don't sell y'all no stuff. They're probably making it harder for y'all to sell stuff now. You know what I'm saying? So there's going to have to be a strategy set by the developer and the writer of the game, by the person who's publishing the game, and then by the marketing media that is determined to do something utterly different from what we got right now. Because if we keep getting these politicized marketing games, video games is going to go the same way that we're seeing American comic books go to something like just one manga, where one manga is making like 2 to 3 times the amount of an entire industry.
You see, you know, the thing about it is, you know, and I'm going to say this before we wrap up. You know, we talking about politicized, you know, I believe if we want to put these things in here, let's at least make it make sense, right?
Yeah.
So about yes. At least, okay, so for instance, I want to have a gay character, or I want to have a character who is a straight, non-binary, whatever you want to say. I want to have that character in my form of media. Well, how about you give Superman's son PTSD or something like that, because he had to deal with some trauma probably inflicted on him by being his father's son, which is probably the most massive burden that you can think of. Imagine being the son of Superman and you got to carry that mantle.
And crazy then he stuff, right? And so he leaves in a comic book and you're left with this dude. And there is no semblance of him even like thinking about the weight of that responsibility. Everybody just pats him on the back and says, oh, you're the best Superman ever. I'm like, yo.
Why can't that dude be like, well, I don't say dude, that's wrong with saying. Well, okay, boom. So I got this character, right? So maybe he's not sure what he is, right? Mm-hmm. As far as terms of his sexuality. But he meets this person and this person helps him cope. And he forms a sort of dependency upon this person. Mm-hmm. And boom, okay, that's a smart way to get that in there. Okay, so we're talking about climate change, right? We're talking about the actions that human beings can take to solve the climate crisis. How come a villain can't put some type of thing in motion that maybe a kryptonite storm, I don't know, something that he can't deal with. And then you have a smart solution to the problem where only human beings have the ability to do something about it.
Hmm.
If you want to do it,
Do
it in a way that makes sense.
Do it in a way that makes sense.
If you want to talk about racial issues and stuff like that, if you want to talk about the issues that Black people have to face, okay, don't put me in no damn rally. All right. Yeah. I'm sick of that. I'm sick of putting it in a rally. How about you make it hard for a Black person to join the Justice League?
Yeah.
Do it in a way that makes sense. Do it in a way that, you know, I don't know. You can still ground things in realism without using like these shock storytelling elements.
Yo, I just got to interrupt you just for a quick moment because like I just thought about what you talked about, like Black folk being in rallies. So the new Static Shock, right, that they dropped in the summertime by Milestones, new Milestone. You know, the original Static Shock actually got his draw from a gang war, which was actually more realistic, more grounded. More, it made more sense. He was just like pretty much caught in the crosshairs of that madness. It was a gang war. They were on the docks, and then like pretty much a shot was fired. Things exploded, and you know, gas and all that stuff just pretty much just put out there, right? Do you know how the new Static Shock got its power?
No.
Do you know, Matt?
No, I didn't look into it. I haven't read it in a while.
You want me to tell you how you got its power?
Yeah, lay it on me.
Are you ready? Yeah. Are you ready? He was at a Black Lives Matter protest. And cops threw out, quote unquote, experimental tear gas. And that's how he got his power.
Experimental tear gas?
That's
what I was saying earlier. Like, you can you can see what they're trying to do. It's like they're trying to connect to the kid. They feel like, okay, how do we get disassociated kids? It's kind of like this. It's kind of like, you know, you take the Fortnite kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the hope is that one day they'll stop playing Fortnite, mm-hmm, and play Assassin's Creed,
mm-hmm,
and they'll play, you know, Final Fantasy or God of War or something else. Like, they're growing in something else. But a lot of these kids haven't. You see what I'm saying? So there's a lot of kids that would play Fortnite, you know, and they might be 10 now, let's say, and they're going to play Fortnite till they're 20, 21. And then the developer, right, look at it and say, hey, like, how can you get somebody? Because like I'm saying, not real like us, because we would have a more of a foundation. So you got a kid here who's really never played anything besides maybe Fortnite and try Apex Legends and Warzone. And they ain't been gaming. Like, they would say, well, I'm a gamer. I've been gaming for 15 years. Well, I've been gaming for 10 years.
Yeah.
And then the developer said, well, they're not going to relate to anything because they haven't did anything. It's like they're a blank slate for the last 10, 15 years. So we don't know what to do. So then somebody says, well, hey, you know, put Static Shock with the Black Lives Matter movement. That just happened. So maybe something that just not happens connects to them.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a funny conversation because of that, like, you know, like it kind of brings up another conversation about, you know, what happened to America culture, yeah, like, you know, screw games and comic books, like, you, yeah, know, what's going on in the schoolhouses, you know, is people reading, is the kids reading books anymore? Is, you,
I
know,
mean, I don't, like, think they are. I watched a video of this girl. She said she's actually graduated from high school and she's like talking about going to disaccredited college. And your boy was from the streets, and he just asked her one question. He said, yo, what's a decade? She could not answer the question.
Yeah.
I'm going to be real with you, man. These, you know, and this is my observation. And y'all probably see it too, because y'all work with younger people or encounter younger people every day. They lack so much foundational skills, yeah, that it's pretty insane.
Yeah.
As far as their knowledge go, their knowledge is only what has been taught to them or what they get on TikTok.
Yeah.
That's another problem, because that means they can be easily victimized by disinformation. Yeah. And they also cannot speak. They, yeah, cannot talk to people. They cannot formulate true conversations. They can't, yeah, express what they want,
yeah,
outside of, you know, wild emotions, outside of anger, outside of, you know, supreme bouts of sadness.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's pretty wild stuff, man. Pretty, yeah, wild stuff.
I mean, but you know, like as crazy as it is, you know, like our mediums kind of provided a sale for stuff like that for us when we were kids.
That's very
so,
true.
So like you look at video games when we were kids, like there were themes in games, like, you know, like even though Cloud didn't have the best character, you know what I'm saying? There was a bit of sadness about Cloud because he really didn't know who he was. Like, right, when with a spoiler alert for folk that, like, you know, I hope you beat it by this time. If you ain't, they ain't my problem.
Living under a rock.
Yeah, it's not my problem anymore. But so you got Cloud Strife, who literally was impostering Zach the entire game without even knowing it until he got to Sephiroth. And then he resigned his fate to Sephiroth because he realized the only reason he was chasing him is because he was supposed to. You know, so then you get to the end of the game. It's now a fight against what he was with his but it's a fight about him actually being himself.
Yeah.
Finally, being strong as himself versus Sephiroth, versus him taking up the sword as Zack as Sephiroth. The same, and it's crazy, like foreshadowing in the story put it, he beat Sephiroth on his own. That's how this whole thing started. He killed Sephiroth in the beginning, but for some reason he forgot that he had that same power. And at the very end, he beat Sephiroth again. There's a theme in there for a child, you know, like a 14-year-old Trevor on T-Nigma was in that situation, looking at that and was like, yo, this dude was like, we don't even know, right? He didn't even know who he was, but he figured out who he was, and there's strength in that.
Yeah.
Right.
You can be better than what you are.
You can be better than what you are. And you don't have to be like somebody else to be a better version of you. That's what I got from that game when I was like 13, 14 years old playing that game. Now let's zoom to video games from now. Right. TV shows from now. Now it's just, hey, the power of friendship.
You know, well, if you get that. Because you that's why I was saying, like, you know, I'm a little older. So before there was really games, you know, I was in the library, you know, but back then you had to go to the library. It was a class. Yeah,
facts. Absolutely.
You know, so I spent a lot of time, you know, Alice in Wonderland, Wizard of Oz, you know what I'm saying? Like just reading fairy tale type stuff.
Yeah.
In that way. So by the time I got the games where they could present a story or some level of fantasy or try to tell some type of story, you know, my mind was already maturing it that way to comprehend it. Yeah. Like it wasn't that I didn't understand Zelda. But when a lady tells you, hey, you need to go get these Triforces and stuff, it wasn't the fact I didn't understand the story or what was going on. It was just like, you know, this was the first time I played anything like this.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with Metroid, you know. So, you know, when you fast forward, you know, it's sometimes it's like I said, like it's a lot of stuff we don't take. It's something I had to kind of dwell on, like I took myself out the picture.
Yeah.
And I said, because I looked at him, I said, man, these kids don't have a playground. Mm-mm. These kids don't have, you know, the backyard basketball goals where you're socializing and stuff. You know, they don't have the after school programs.
Yeah.
You know, they don't take art and music in school anymore. And they don't have library classes. So there's a real disconnect from, you know, that on that normal level. And so by the time you get the games and stuff, it's like they just don't know. Like they have no idea. And then, you know, then you got older people who, you know, like how you say, make games or write comic books, trying to figure out how to connect to somebody who doesn't, like I say, like if it was just targeting me and you and Matt, it'd be easy. You know, just like me, I watch DC, what's it called? DC Fandom.
Yeah.
And I went straight through it. I said, oh, yeah, Aquaman looks pretty good. It's going to be more serious. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Black Adam. Oh, yeah, here you go. Because I'm already there. Already in there, like, from childhood. But, you know, these guys will look at it, and, you know, and that was one of my bigger arguments about Injustice. Like, it's cool. I like it, but it's a Batman game.
It is.
That comes from the idea that most of the youth don't know anything outside of Batman.
Yeah. Batman, right. Batman is the anchor for a lot of kids for this generation. And Iron Man, Tony Stark from the movies was the anchor on the Marvel side. So when a person like me steps up and say, yeah, Iron Man's a C-level character in Marvel, it's like blasphemy. They're like, no. What are you talking about? Iron Man, Tony Stark's one of the most important. Like, he's not. Literally in the comics while I was growing up, this dude was a drunk alcoholic bum for like 20 years. There was nothing you could look for.
With a bad heart.
You know what I'm saying? So then on top of that, you get to the 2000s, he got extremists, and that meant that he could be infected because he was a computer. So there is no use for this man. We already had Dr. Doom, who was like infinitely smarter than Tony Stark. Reed Richards, who was infinitely smarter than Tony Stark. T'Challa, written originally, is infinitely smarter than Tony Stark. Shuri in the comic books was not smarter than Tony Stark. We ain't getting that right now.
We'll do another one for how they
be changing these characters over. But any final thoughts before we close this out, man, about like, you know, what you think about the gaming situation or just geek culture in general, you know, like in going forward and doing innovation, like what you think needs to be done? Two things that you think that needs to be done and we'll close.
Well, I believe right now we are at an impasse. And there's two things that need to be done to get us on the right path. One is the Asian market has to save us. They got to show us how to do it. You know, if mm-hmm. they basically had to show us how to build cars. You know, we invented the car, but they had to show us how to build it without tearing up. Right. So they got to show us the way, and they have the responsibility because our creators or the people in charge like the vision to give our youth imagination to build up the next set of creators.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and because the reason why it's their duty now is because just how much manga is selling.
Yeah.
The second thing is, you know, to rebuild anything, you must destroy it. So the comments got to fail. The game's got to fail. Now, I don't know what it's going to look like after that, but sometimes you got to build over the rubble. Yeah. And so this stuff is going to have to fail in some way, shape, or form. For the people who are in charge now, they got to see it as financially unsustainable. And that's the only way. Because if you look at the power structure of gaming, the reason why nothing can change is because there's only five people with the money. Facts. And the five people, four to five people think the same way. Or three to five, you know, three to five think the same way.
Yeah.
And so that's a really big problem. And like Bobby said earlier, man, if you're not paying attention to the business side of it, man, you know, and once you start digging deep, once you start looking at it, it blows your mind, makes you feel sad.
Facts.
Makes you feel real sad. And so that's two things. Like I say, Asia's going to have to lift us up, and the current infrastructure we have is going to have to fail. Now, I hope the failing part doesn't happen. I hope there's enough smart people in the room to say, okay, we're on the brink of absolute destruction here. But I don't feel that they are going to do that. I don't feel like that's going to happen.
Steals, what you got, man? Two things.
Yeah, I just kind of agree with Matt. You know, I've been saying this for years. I think, you know, and it's not because I want it to happen, but I think
you can feel it in the air.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just Microsoft. You know, and I don't want to, you know, just being real, like I don't want to come off as a fanboy, like, you know, well, that's what you want. And I just think that like they
I was advised I got to go.
Well, for the reason being, because in their mind, that's like Microsoft wants to win, you know, like Microsoft wants to win by any means necessary. So it's not really about what's best for gaming as much as it's for them, as much about what's best for our investors and our profit margins. And that's never going to end well. It's just not. Like, you can just look at anybody that Microsoft has and you can tell, like, they're just suits. Like, they don't really even come across. Like, I was watching an interview last week, and they was talking about Deathloop and Arcane Studios. And then, you know, one of the guys was like an Xbox guy. And he was like, yeah, you know, I just love Arcane. And then he was like, I played Dishonored so many times, but I couldn't tell you anything about the game.
Oh, buddy.
And I was just like, wow. You know, it stunned me. You know what I'm saying? Like, because
that's messed up to say that out loud and in public, and you work for somebody. That's jacked up right there.
Right. Wow. And he came across like you could see in his face, like he genuinely loved the game. Like, and I was just like, how do you play a slow paced stealth game?
It is slow paced.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, how did you miss the story? Like, I didn't understand. Like, and he said he played it multiple times. I was just like, how is that even possible? Like,
oh my goodness.
Even if you weren't really paying attention, you would have to get kind of like what's going on in the game. You know, you don't really need to remember everything.
Yeah.
But you kind of say, like, oh yeah, you know, I did this and I did that, and I killed these guys. I can't remember their names. But at the end of it, you know, this happens and you kill this guy, and that's really the base of the story. But he's like, I didn't remember any of it. And I was just like,
wow.
You know, I just kind of faded. And I was just like, No, this is what's wrong. Yeah. Right. This is what's wrong with American gaming. Like, because like how, you know, and he was confident. Like he's somebody that works for a company that's
he's likely getting paid like at least six figures.
And he's probably got an opinion in the boardroom.
Yeah.
And it's like, and this video you're doing, like means, you know, hundreds of thousands of millions of people are going to see it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're very comfortable
telling everybody that you don't even, that you played the game, but you didn't play the game.
Right. Cause how do you like Arcane?
Wow.
Like, how do you even like the game? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, how can you say I like the game, but not know anything about the game?
You know, like as crazy as that is, I've seen it. In PlayStation, people who have not the slightest idea what this game is about, they probably turned it on, like looked at the first bit, twirled a girl or guy around in the game and kind of shut the thing off. And how they try and sell the people who actually are gamers on the fact that they care about the game and not the money. We know they want the money. That's never been the issue here. We understand we're a capitalist nation. Money is there. Absolutely. But why not enjoy it while you're making money, right? So the thing that I think I already said my two, but just to reiterate, look, Bobby, did you finish your two? Let me stop.
You finished? Yeah, your two? I was you know like, well, all I was finna say was
go ahead and finish, bro. I'm sorry, go ahead, man.
It's not per se about Microsoft as like to all my guys out there and girls that have an Xbox. It's not about Xbox personally, you know. It's not. So it's more about what they represent. Like, you know what I'm saying? Where we want to go and where we need to go is like Sony and Nintendo need to rule. You see what I'm saying? Because if it doesn't go that way, then all we'll have is microtransactions.
Yeah.
And you know, and what you call it. So that's my whole point. Like once you know, and Microsoft still is what you would consider American gaming. No matter if Sony outsells them here in America, it's still Microsoft is the staple. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Bethesda, Microsoft, EA, and once they see Microsoft fall, or not just go out of business per se, it could even be where Sony's at 100 million and they're only at 15 million. But something needs to come in. It's kind of like what happened to Sony. Sony comes out with PS3. Sony wakes up though halfway through the generation to figure out that following Microsoft is going to put them out of business, because that's what Sony was doing when they first came out with PS3. They said, well, hey, let's just kind of, Microsoft is doing well. Let's just kind of follow this trip. Let's make these first person shooters and make these online games. And this might be the new trend. And then what Sony started figuring out was that the trend was dying, you know, and then around PS3, that's when they kind of started kind of changing, going back to more. You know, they didn't go back to PS2 per se, but they did try to figure out a way to change their trajectory in the sense of saying, hey, man, we need to get back to these story-driven games, more something that has a lot more substance. And, you know, then you kind of see them pulling back in PS4. They were trying some stuff, and they're still trying, you know, trying to keep some balance.
Yeah.
It's not about Sony being perfect or not. But it's at least the attempt just to have balance, to be popular, to meet the quotas, but to still say, hey, we got Ratchet and Clank. We still got a Kenya. You know, we still got this Final Fantasy game. Hey, we still got Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we know we can do better, but we get you as a gamer, as a fan of the culture, we get you. You know what I'm saying? When you look at Xbox, you know, where you see a fantastic game like Alan Wake, and it just sits there, and then you find out that they told the developer that we didn't want it.
Yeah, they didn't even want. Like, this is the same people who made Control. You know what I'm saying? So like, and they're like, nah, we don't need anything like that. So yeah, I mean, it's on them. That's on them, man. On that note, and so that's it. But that's what we think about this. I'm hoping that you guys have an opinion of your own. If you do, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, enigmasunc.com. At enigmasunc. If you want to look at our website, enigmasunc.com. If you want to email us, info@enigmasunc.com. Go ahead and plug yourself, guys, and we'll be done for this particular episode.
All right, your boy Steals Forever, aka the King of Geeks. Definitely check me out on youtube.com/Steals Forever. That'll be STEELZ number 4 EVER, guys. And like I said, I haven't been updating lately, but I will have a major update in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
All right. So once again, this is Matt, one half of Geek Syndrome. Just remember, you can find us on just about everything where you can listen to a podcast. So that means Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Verb. We're on Facebook Podcast now and a bunch of other platforms as well. So check us out. We always drop something every Friday. The last bit of content was top 5 anime, manga that we're reading right now. And also get ready for the Dune 2021 review. That's on the way. Listen to us anytime.
Bet. And this is T-Nigma with Enigmas Unchained. On behalf of my homie, the Ice, we got to say it to you. Solve those enigmas. Do not leave them unsolved. And cover up your faces and wash your filthy hands. You know what I'm saying? We're not telling you to get vaccinated. They ain't got nothing to do with us. But still cover up your face. It's flu season. It's flu season, sucker. Cover up your face.
You dirty rascals.
Yeah, for real. And I say, why? Like, cover up your face and wash your filthy hands. And we out here.